Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
I came from outside the industry. I worked at Coca-Cola. And when I first came in, there were many times when I was implementing different programs or ways of working that they would tell me, as a joke, go back to Coke. That's how they work. Here we just sell cars. Here's what we do, right? Some of the managers, or mostly the managers, who really didn't understand, I think, the bigger picture. And so I had to overcome that. And I did. I still have great friends there. We still talk and we still share coaching opportunities with each other professionally. So I did really build relationships there that are like lifelong friendships. But there was a huge hill to overcome. And I really didn't understand the industry. And that's why I started doing the training on the side myself, so that I could relate to them. Because they were right. I didn't know what they were doing. I didn't know how to sell a car or write up service for the car on the drive. So I overcome that and had great partnerships. And then I ran into this. So then that knocks you down a little bit. So then you do go back into how you're being seen, and it does create, you're right, it does create a chip on your shoulder.
New role, new industry, new function, and completely different domain, and you know that there is a high priority goal that's set in front of you. You're ready to go. You have a chip on your shoulder, and you know that the people who hired you just took a shot on you when you weren't necessarily ideal for that role because you don't have the industry experience. The stakes are pretty high. And then you get going and you realize you might have made a mistake and things might be slipping out of your control. What do? You just heard from Candy Gongora, who experienced just that in one of her early career moves. And today's story is going to talk through how that mistake, how being told you could always take your ball and go home, was the catalyst to her springboarding her career and hitting fast forward. So what's Candy's story? Candy is the Chief Transformation and People Officer at Goodway Group, where she's led award-winning culture initiatives and scaled operations to support double-digit growth, all within a fully remote workforce. She has over a decade of experience transforming organizations by aligning strategy, systems, and talent. And under her leadership, Goodway Group has earned recognition as a best place to work, has improved employee engagement scores year over year, and has successfully executed complex change initiatives across global teams. She's also a breast cancer survivor, dog lover, and passionate advocate for making business more human. And this is her story. Candy, welcome to the show.
Great to be here with you.
This is going to be a fun conversation. I'm looking forward to hearing your story. So let's get right into it. When you think about your career, and this isn't your first rodeo, you're a CHRO. When you look back at your leadership journey, what was the moment in your career where you found yourself in a situation where you were like, oh crap, I think I really screwed something up?
Yes. And to be clear, I've had a few of those moments, but this was a big moment with a big lesson. I was working for a company and my main purpose was to help them implement a good operating system as far as like how they work together, their processes, metrics. And the outcome of that was to apply and receive the Malcolm Baldrige Award, which is a big deal. And so that's where my mindset was at. And it was a different industry than I was used to working in. So I spent hundreds of hours watching training sessions and learning how to work within the industry, learning where they're coming from. So I felt really good and equipped to put our roadmap together and push us forward. And I'm competitive and I like to move fast. And so as I was going through that roadmap, we ran into a barrier and we just weren't moving forward the direction or the pace that I felt like we could. And every opportunity I could, I would bring that up to the president and the CEO and we should do this, we should do that. I think we can do this. And just reminded them over and over again. I noticed that the CEO started acting differently. And there were some meetings that I was no longer involved in, where before they were bringing me into everything. And so I was talking to the president one day, and I was very frustrated because I knew we had the ability to do what I wanted to do at that moment. And I felt like that was going to take us forward. And the president said that, he always said, this too shall pass. Don't get too worked up. This too shall pass. But then he also said, you're smart and you bring a lot to the table. But he's like, you like basketball, right? And I said, yes. He goes, imagine that you're at this beautiful basketball court. He goes, and it belongs to our CEO. It's not your court. It's his court. And if you don't want to play the game by his rules or at the pace that he wants to, then really you can take your basketball and go home, because at the end of the day, it's his court. And that really hit me like a ton of bricks, actually. It was just like, wow. Like, I felt like we were playing on the same team. And here he is talking about, do I even need to be here in the Coliseum, in the court? And so that was a big deal. And I had to really change my direction, my approach, how I thought about things to carry us forward and to carry myself forward, be a part of the team.
There's a lot in there that we need to unpack. But the first thing that I want to tackle, you mentioned earlier that you were brought in to implement a good operating system in pursuit mm-hmm. of an award that the company was seeking. Seems like an odd goal to go through this like massive change with the purpose of winning an award. Didn't that set off any red flags in your brain when you were going through that conversation? Like, that's a lot of work to go get a shiny thing to put on your mantle.
It is. When I was actually applying for the job, I had done some research around the award, and I understood it was given out by the Vice President of the United States. And so it was an award created by the government initially to help us actually compete against other countries in our quality and help our American countries do better, be better, and be more efficient. And the group I worked for was a luxury automobile dealership, and they wanted to be seen as a service company, like a Ritz or like a Disney or something like that, versus a car dealership. So they were trying to break through how they're seen and how they operate, and wanted to be a place where kids could get out of school and graduate from college and then come work there. So they were trying to change everything about their brand and their purpose. And so they felt like that national award, not only receiving the award would bring attention, but the process you had to go through to get there was very rigorous. And they felt like it was validated in a way that was not just an easy award to get. It actually validated it for our employees, for themselves, and for our clients.
I like how you brought up the change in brand and the change in how you're perceived in the marketplace is validated by this award. One of the things that I think about when you look for those sort of external validation items as an individual, as a company, if you're always looking for external validation as an individual, you can often get steered in the wrong direction. Did you experience any of that sense as you were going through this process?
I think so. I think that's what drove me a little bit to push on the direction I was heading, because I had experience with ISO and some other awards and things. I didn't have direct experience with this process. I did, obviously, the study, and I became an examiner, which is a big deal for this award. And so I was learning, and I do think that I was seeking that validation externally so that I didn't feel like I was an imposter. And I feel like I learned quickly. So the more I got that validation externally, the more I had confidence internally. But I still think I was seeking their validation to see me as an expert. Like, they took a chance on me. They knew I didn't have experience with this award. They knew I had adjacent capabilities and skills. And so when they weren't listening over and over again, and I did have some of that external validation, it made me start questioning how they see me. And am I being seen as the expert still? Or are they going to feel like I'm not enough?
When I hear that, I'm picturing Candy walking around with a chip on her shoulder, feeling like she's got to prove herself to the people around her. And if I'm tracking the right way, that had to be crushing when you started noticing that you were getting iced out of some of these meetings. So what were you feeling at the time when you started seeing these things that you're seeking internal validation and you're getting iced out of all of these important conversations?
Just to give you some context, the industry was, as I mentioned, it was a car dealership group, and it was a lot of men who have grown up in the industry. I came from outside the industry. I worked at Coca-Cola. And when I first came in, there were many times when I was implementing different programs or ways of working that they would tell me, as a joke, go back to Coke. That's how they work. Here we just sell cars. Here's what we do, right? Some of the managers, or mostly the managers, who really didn't understand, I think, the bigger picture. And so I had to overcome that. And I did. I still have great friends there. And we still talk and we still share coaching opportunities with each other professionally. So I did really build relationships there that are like lifelong friendships. But there was a huge hill to overcome. And I really didn't understand the industry. And that's why I'd started doing the training on the side myself, so that I could relate to them, because they were right. I didn't know what they were doing. I didn't know how to sell a car or write up service for the car on the drive. So I overcome that and had great partnerships. And then I ran into this. So then that knocks you down a little bit. So then you do go back into how you're being seen. And it does create, you're right, it does create a chip on your shoulder. And I think there were many times where, and I didn't even know if this was a thing at that time, but I could see myself getting triggered and react a certain way, which I'm sure was very annoying to the CEO and or the president. The president worked closer with me every day, so he understood me a little bit more than the CEO, but it definitely changed the way I showed up and probably escalated my pushing, or what we would call passion, in how I showed up.
There's something that you said in what you just described that caught my attention, and that was your point that you had people at the front line saying, hey, go back to Coke. We just sell cars over here. Right. And when I heard that, you're going through this big rebrand, or at least the strategic leadership wants to do this rebrand, but your frontline people don't see any part of this as being meaningful because they are under the belief that they just sell cars. There, if I'm in your role, I'm going to be like, there's a big disconnect that the CEO and the strategic leadership needs to fix. When you heard that from the people in the front lines, how did you filter that message upwards so that people are actually connecting the dots and everybody's on the same page?
Fortunately and unfortunately, but fortunately for me, they had applied to the Texas State Award before I got there. And three people were involved and they did not win. They thought they had everything buttoned up and everything was great. And the examiners came in, and when they were verifying what was on the application, it's a very extensive process. And they're usually on site for about a week and talking to lots of employees. They found the gaps, exactly what you're talking about. That leadership had this goal, the employees were doing a great job, and they were great at what they did, but there was a gap of the consistency and the shared larger vision. So that had happened, and then that's what created opportunity for me to be there. So I was able to use that example to say or show them a plan where we can involve employees, because the more employees we have involved, the better. And so I was able to create a training and development path where we actually educated the employees on the award and the criteria that we had to use, and change it into layman's terms. So tell them, like, what they're really asking here is for this. They want to know, how do we, and then they want to see our results. And so we created teams around the different categories of that award, educated all the employees in the award, and leadership was involved in that too, including the CEO, of sharing why this is important and how it helps all of us. And they, our tagline for our employees were experts in excellence. And so that really added to, look, this actually does make them an expert in business, not just in the car industry, auto industry. So that was a pretty easy sell because of their experience previously.
So you went through all of that. You have, and maybe I'm getting the sequences wrong, but at some point you have a conversation with the president of the company, and he tells you about the ball and the court, and if you want, you can take your ball and go home.
Right.
That's going to spin up a whole nother series of things in my head. When you heard that, how did you respond?
As I mentioned, it took me back. And so I had to really think through, what does that mean for me is that it sounded threatening, but because I knew the president, that's not where he was coming from. He always applied tough love with me, and still to this day. So I knew that, but it really made me reflect on what is my part here? What is my part in this? What position am I playing? And how do I switch my play so that I can show up more as a team player? And so I did ask him questions. What do you mean? And what is he saying? Or what have you heard? Or what would you do if you were me? What does it look like going forward? And how can I change so that I have more influence and I'm seen differently? The good news is he made me feel as if it's not like your career's over. It's not like it's a career breaker, but it could potentially be a career staller if this continues. So luckily he told me early enough that I could make an adjustment, because if I had gone on in that down that path, who knows what would have happened.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation and want to stay ahead of the curve, join our Accelerated Transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or via email, and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show. So sometimes when I hear team player come up in conversations, I have a lot of similar wiring to you. I'm competitive. I want to go fast. And when I hear team player, I hear go along to get along. You just got to toe the line and just do what you're told. Did any of that go through your head when you were processing the team player phrase in part of the conversation?
What went through my head was frustration, because I can see it. Like, one of the things that I see very easily is gaps. Like, I can just see them. And then instantly my head turns into, okay, here's a plan or a hypothesis or a first few steps that we can do to get started. That just happens instantly. And so sometimes it's great and sometimes it's very frustrating because you can just see it and nobody else can. And so what went through my head is he hired me for this. Like, he literally hired me for this. And in the interview, I told him, the CEO, if you hire me, we will become a recipient. We will become a recipient of the award. I have no doubt. And so there was part of me that felt like I can't keep my commitment to you. And I'm also a loyal person, right? And so I can't keep my commitment to you. And so that was conflicting with what I was hearing. And then the other thing was, yes, if we're going to be a team player and we're going to all work on this in a different way together, and I'm not able to bring forth what I felt was my strength, I felt like it took a little bit of the control or ability for me to help us win. And I felt a little helpless initially because I didn't know how to proceed or how to keep moving fast or how to work at the pace or the way that they wanted to work, because I really didn't understand where he was coming from or how they were seeing things differently, because I thought we were all running towards the same goal.
All right. So you went through all of that stuff.
Yes.
And just to recap, you're brought in for a mission. You thought everybody was aligned to the mission. You start pushing to achieve the mission. And then all of a sudden, certain groups are not even aligned. Some groups don't prioritize it the right way. And you got this whole mess. And you got this other person that's telling you, you could always take your ball and go home.
Right.
So you went through all of that and you came out the other side. How did it shake out? And what did you learn from going through that entire cycle?
I leaned into the president and really asked him to coach me and mentor me a little bit through this, because he had been with the company a long time. He had a great relationship with the CEO. So through that, we got through it, and we ultimately did become a recipient of both the state and the national award. And great things came for the company and for me and my career. But it did create a lot of lessons learned. I think one of the things I learned is many times it is a me problem and not a them problem. Like, I really did feel that the CEO wasn't seeing it. They couldn't see what I saw. And so I was trying to help him, or I felt like I was trying to help him see it and acknowledge the gap, and then also a way through it, using my expertise and my gift to get through it. So there was that. And I learned that I have to meet him where he is and understand his point of view, maybe there's a bigger objective. Maybe there's something else going on that I'm not aware of. He has his own place and his own lens of what he's driving towards, and I'm a slice of that. And so I had to remember that. So I did learn that. And I also learned that questions are usually better than telling in a lot of situations. When you're going through a big transformation like that, you have your here, your to, and you're going to, you're from, and you're going to this place. And there is a big, messy middle. And you have to be okay to be in that middle. And even though you want to run fast and you can see the opportunity and you know that the leaders and the employees can do it, like you see their potential, to take the time to, instead of just direct and say, this is what we can do and go here and do this because I see it in my head, ask questions. So if I ask the CEO more questions, what's really your pain? What are we solving first? Is there a specific milestone that you want me to run to? Is the pace correct? What am I missing? How can I serve this mission better? Just some common questions throughout the process. Every time we're together and when he gives me a directive or he gives me feedback, ask questions versus just taking that and then giving him my expertise. So those were just a couple of lessons that I learned that I do take forward. And it's hard because, like I said, I see those things and I truly believe in the companies I work for, and I want to help them succeed. And it can still be hard not to get frustrated or not to want to solve it quickly.
So one of the things that I like about what you just described is you started off with a cliche, which I don't necessarily like, which is you got to meet him where he is. How do you do that? Which is asking the series of questions that helps paint the picture of what's in his head. Or what's in your leader's head so you have an idea of what the deliverable needs to look like. Are there any power questions that you rely on to unlock that conversation that you found work over and over again in helping you get the big picture and start the conversation?
Yes. One I use often still today is, what is your pain today? Because I'm so focused on the goal. And usually, like in transformations, it's a longer term goal. It's not going to happen overnight. But work's still happening, right? You're still running a company. There's things that are still popping up that are where his focus may be. And so usually if I start the question with what is your pain today, or what's keeping you up right now? Or if you could solve, what problem could you solve right now that would make your day, week, month better? I can understand where he's coming from, where his mindset is, and then it opens it up to a broader conversation that then I can synthesize and determine, what does this mean for me and my mission? And do I pivot? Do I pause? Do I change up some of the milestones? What does that look like? And so that really is helpful because it's really trying to understand him or her from their perspective and sitting their chair or walking their shoes for just a moment.
So I can imagine a scenario, given the environment that you're in a male-dominated industry and they sell cars, mm-hmm. certain amount of ego that's involved in that industry. And I could imagine a leader within that space getting annoyed with all these questions that are being asked. So right. If you're the one that's asking the questions and then you sense that somebody is getting annoyed with these questions, how would you respond to that sense of annoyance and diffuse that so that you can keep clarifying things so that you're delivering a good product?
Depending on the person, there's a couple of ways I would do that. One, if it's a person who just wants to hurry and get things done, just give me the answer. Obviously, they get really annoyed easily. I will stop and say, this is based on what you said. This is what I'm thinking. I think we should do this, or I'm going to go do this, or I'm going to make these changes, and just really show there's action coming from this. And to your point about ego, if there is ego, I would turn I would reflect and share information that meets that ego, that reaches where they are as far as, I see the gap that you're seeing. I can help you here. And here's what I'm thinking. So again, but both of them have to show action. It just may be different. One may be like, just tell me what you're going to do and leave. No more questions. And one could be, they want to be heard too. And they want to be acknowledged for the work they're doing or what's on their plate or the problems they have. And sometimes I have used the point of I'm asking these questions right now because I'm trying to learn more from you, or I'm trying to understand how I can bring more value in this moment. If you'll just be patient with me, I'm going to give you some answers. So there's a few different ways depending on the person.
You learned a lot of lessons in going through that experience. How did that help you fast forward your career trajectory and new opportunities that you took on?
It helped tremendously because I learned how to partner better. I learned how to pivot. And I also learned that the work is not lost. I think part of my frustration was we were doing this great work and then we would run into a roadblock and we still had this great work or a pivot or we're not ready. And so I did learn to look for the signals of maybe the org is not ready at this moment. And so I can see those now and I can acknowledge those with the CEO. So they're not ready, or we have more work over here, or it's just not the right time. And one of the things I learned to do without emotion mainly is, and to teach my team, is the work is not lost. We did some great work. And just because we're moving in a different direction or the CEO doesn't want to use that work right now does not mean that it is lost. And so during my tenure there, I would do the work. And when we pivot, which happened, I would tell my team, let's put it on the shelf. And it will be there when this request comes up or when the org is ready or when the CEO sees the gap that we see, it's going to be there. And then we'll pull it off and we'll be heroes because we can work even faster. And that happened over and over again. And so I've carried that forward too, is the work is still done. It's still great work. It's still great thinking. And that helps my team not to get frustrated as well. So doing that has helped. And then also really, like I said, questioning more, which has helped me build great relationships with the leaders and the CEO that I've, the other CEOs I've worked with, because that really does show them that I'm wanting to meet them where they are, or I want to stand beside them in locked arms as we move forward to this goal. Fully aligned versus you gave me the outcome and now I'm just going to go run over here to it.
So when you're talking about that process, I like the fact that you called out, hey, even if we take on a project and we finish it, but it doesn't get used right away, it's still good work. We can put it on the shelf and come back to it when the organization is ready. And I want to dig into that organizational readiness concept that you mentioned. What are the signals that indicate to you that an organization is at the right point in time for this specific type of change? Any sort of signs that you can call out that, yeah, the timing is right for this?
I think one thing to look for is if the employees see the problem, because if the employees see it, their voice in it, they may not say it's X, but they're saying symptoms that can be solved by this solution. And so their feedback and listening, we had a listening and learning process, constantly listening to the ground floor and all the different levels to understand that's really going to give you insight into the readiness. I think when the leaders are starting to speak that language, whatever it is that's tied to how we're moving, that's a good signal too. Because if you're over here implementing something or making a transition, a transformation, and you're the only one speaking in that language or speaking to the future of what that's going to look like, then the leaders aren't ready, which means the employees aren't ready. And when the leaders are also educating their employees and also talking about the why and what's in it for them without you having to give them talking points or push that through, that's another sign that they're ready.
I want you to take a minute and talk to that person that's 10, 15 years behind you right now into their first big leadership role. What are the things that they need to pay attention to avoid the traps that you fell into when you experienced this?
I think especially coming in and you may want to prove yourself, just understand it's not about you. Your worth is not about them going with your idea or going fully bought into your direction. You're there for a reason and you can't take it personal, and you can have the passion and be really excited about your job and succeeding, but you can't just go in front of people or go rogue and be successful. So it's not about you. It's about the full company. That does include the leaders there. And that goes back to being curious and asking those questions and building a relationship with the leadership team and the leaders in the company So you understand, to your point, they get frustrated by these questions and you can approach them in different ways. It almost feels like you're a chameleon sometimes because you need to show up differently, still authentic, but differently for the different types of people you're working with. I think that's important. And I think also remember that if you are really asking the questions and you truly understand their goal in the moment, their short-term goals, like the long-term goal, but you're really going and hitting the short-term goals, that's a win, even if it isn't the direction you wanted to go in. And that builds trust to where more and more they will listen to you, or there'll be further discussions and healthy debate about your ideas. And so when you first get there, you have to work through that. And sometimes you have to do things and be open to things that aren't your idea that you think might not work at all, but they could. And so trust that. Trust yourself and trust the process and be open.
Great stuff. If folks want to continue the conversation with you, where can they find you, Candy?
The best place is on LinkedIn, and it's just my name, K-A-N-D-I, and then Gongora, G-O-N-G-O-R-A, which both are different spellings.
I'll make sure we put that in the show notes. So I appreciate you hanging out and sharing with us your story. When I think about what we talked about, what stands out to me is a couple of things. And I'm speaking to anybody that has spent their career walking around with a chip on their shoulder, wanting to prove things to people. Because I think a lot of us who are high performers or competitive can fall into that category. We often come into these scenarios, we earn the spot because we can see a problem. We've gotten the opportunity to go ahead and solve the problem, but just because we can see it doesn't mean anybody else sees what the problem is. And that is where things go from a you problem to a me problem. It's our job to ask the right questions so that everybody is looking at the world with the same set of eyes or similar set of eyes that we have. So if we don't take the time in our rush to go ahead and make an impact, in our rush to go ahead and prove ourselves, if we don't take the time to ask the right questions at all levels of the organization so people are looking at the world with a similar perspective, we're going to get frustrated and we're going to be told that you can take your ball and go home. And that's what we want to avoid. So if you want to avoid the frustration of being able to see things and getting aggravated because nobody else sees the same things that you're seeing, you have to take a step back and ask the questions that help reveal the world around the environment that you're in. So that's what I took away from this conversation. And I think it's really important for anybody who operates at a high pace to slow down and ask those questions. So I appreciate you sharing that with us on the show. For those of you who've been listening to this conversation, if you like the conversation, make sure you leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. And then tune in next time when we will have another leader joining us and sharing with us how they really screwed stuff up. And that actually meant all the difference in being able to accelerate their careers. Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more changemakers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection. See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.